Attention pro athletes. Want to secure your financial legacy and thrive off the field? Oakbridge Wealth Management, led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, is your dedicated financial planning ally. But don't take it from me. Take it from the Dallas Cowboys' Tyler Biadasz. He says, Chris set goals financially and has been incredibly impactful in my journey in the NFL. Experience our customized, comprehensive approach, trusted by top NFL players. Don't leave your financial success to chance. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. And let Oakbridge Wealth Management guide you across the goal line.
Bernstein again. Big opening. Pass 5. Pass 10. Burnwell's a man. And he goes all the way to the 15-yard line. 17 yards.
Welcome back to Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by BetOnline.ag and Oakbridge Wealth Management. I'm Matt Perkins, joined, as always, by Badger legend, the Hebrew Hammer himself, Matt Bernstein. Bernie, how are we doing today?
Dude, it's even more than a holiday today. We have another fullback on, possibly one of the best. He's definitely on one hand, definitely. Dude, also just a super nice human being, one of my favorite people. Brady, I appreciate you joining us. I know Matt Perkins is going to do more of this, but like I fanboyed you when you were in college because you played the same position. And then after college, now I just love you. You're one of the most handsome young men I've ever been around.
Thank you.
Terrible golfer, but so am I.
That's
so
right. It's okay. Hey, I'm totally fine with that. I don't put enough time into it, nor do I want to be decent at it. But thank you. I think it's been super cool to develop a relationship with you over the past years, because I, looking down at the high school, we live close to the high school here in Richland Center, and I can remember back in those days watking you. We've talked about, everyone talks about your game against Penn State and all the other cool stuff you were doing. And so folks like you, Luke Swan, and others, you know, inspired me to want to be a Badger. So pretty cool to come full circle and be a friend with you now and be a part of that Badger alumni.
Well, we really appreciate you taking some time, like Bernie said, here today on the podcast to, you know, go in the Wayback Machine and have a fullback fest. Because let's face it, some of our favorite episodes are fullback fests. Before we get into it, want to remind the good folks listening and tuning in all around the world that we are presented by BetOnline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 15% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, Bet Online, where the game starts. We're going to start back in Richland Center, where you are now. Speaking of coming full circle, Brady, and I'm going to ask you the same question that we pretty much ask everyone on the show. How the heck does young Brady Ewing get into football?
Oh, man. Goes way back. I mean, I grew up around all sorts of sports, whether it be basketball, football, baseball, soccer, played about everything growing up, and really took a liking to football at a young age, probably third, fourth grade. Didn't start tackle until sixth grade, but my parents growing up always recorded us on those little VHS tapes. I don't even know what they would be called, but they recently got all those transitioned over to DVDs. So they've been busting out some old school flag football highlights and sending them out to the fam.
Time out. That's amazing. And send me some of those, please. Oh, my goodness. I want to see little Brady Ewing just, like, crushing people. Well, it's flag football. I guess you weren't crushing people.
Yeah. I was juking them, though. Looked like you against Penn State, man. Hurdling people, juking people.
You're too kind. I watch those clips probably once a week.
At least. That's great. But, yeah, that's been – that. Looking back at it, that's really where the love of the game started. We didn't have much of a youth football program growing up here in Richland Center, smaller town, and it's since been developed and growing. But sixth grade, actually, a handful of us kids that were friends growing up decided to go over to Wisconsin Heights area, and we played for their youth football team just so we could play tackle football leading into the middle school. The first year of tackle here at Richland Center. And that's really where the love and the passion grew. But honestly, basketball was probably my first love. and enjoyed the heck out of that. So I played a ton of basketball growing up and through the AAU circuit, traveling circuit and all that, and enjoyed that. But basically anything that with a ball and sports that I could chase, loved that, and grew up in the gym a lot with my sister and older sister and brother, doing all sorts of fun stuff too growing up.
Right. Do you think that basketball helps in just like speed, jumping, like explosiveness? Like, I feel like everyone who played football, a lot of people also played basketball. You don't have to be successful in basketball. You just played it though.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I think multiple sports in general, our kids in soccer is big in Richland Center, the youth program, and it's so good for kids, hand-eye coordination, endurance, you know, just general athleticism, change of direction. And it's really fun. It's really fun to see, because I think exposure to a myriad of things is only going to help you long term. And a place like Wisconsin, at least when I coached there for a year, it always seemed like they value guys that played multiple sports, because once you get to college and you do focus and you do put the time in the weight room, you know, nutrition, all that, the sky is really the limits at that point with that focus.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because we see so many guys who come out of like the South, right? They're playing football year round. They're playing 7-on-7 in the winter. They're doing all of this. And it feels like in some ways that they like max out their potential earlier in a lot of ways than the guys from Wisconsin, from the upper Midwest, who are always playing 3 sports, 4 sports, whatever. And so that's always been something that's been really interesting sort of for me to just, you know, I mean, this is obviously very anecdotal evidence on my account, but so obviously you're a fullback, but in high school you were a running back. Were you always a running back as a little kid? Were you playing all over the place? You know, were you like me and Bernie, where you were forced to play the line because you're too heavy?
Oh, you were above the weight, weight restriction. Oh man, that's brutal.
Not just above it, I was the 2X. So like, as you fat shame, you can't fat shame people now, but I was 2Xs. So usually if you were 1X, you were like a little bit above the weight. And if you were 2X, like you could be the fattest kid on the field. Sadly.
Hey, so I have a question for
I'm
you.
I'm thick. I got big bones. I got a nice personality.
Oh, great personality. So I have a question for you. This was brought up recently because I help coach high school football around here now. And with youth tackle football and some of those weight restrictions, do you feel like those kids that get the X or double X in your case, do you think it limits some of your development early on because you're only doing O-line stuff? Or do you feel like if you had had more exposure to other positions, that might help?
Brady flipping on me. I love it. That's a great question. I actually think we played so – first off, that's why my basketball question, because you play so much other sports. You develop all these other, like, ability to jump, move side to side. You're running different things. Can you guys hear the drill? Okay, good, because we're doing a lot of construction here. It's bananas. But I think, like, playing different sports throughout all year round helps you develop different things. If you're – like, I think you have to find a – hopefully – as you coach high school and you watch kids, like you're not tracking them. Like you're not sticking them at O-line and saying you will forever be here. Now, if you're a kid who's 6 foot at third grade and weighs 220 pounds, maybe he might be that person. But if he stays 220 and he becomes 6'8", he might be a tight end, or maybe he's something else. Like, so my coach in high school did a good job. I was like a doofy kid who loved the violence of the game. And I played O-line pretty much until I was a sophomore in high school. So as a ninth grader, I was a guard, defensive tackle, and a 5'3 or 5'2.
Wow.
Then I moved to play tight end and middle linebacker. And that like flipped the switch of, dude, crazy Bernie. Like it just playing middle linebacker is like the epitome of violence.
Especially in high school, man, where you can just go freelance basically and just go make plays.
Just follow the fullback wherever he goes. And we played a lot of wing T teams, and we were wing T. Yeah. And if you were stupid, don't take this wrong, but you were stupid enough to do like an eye and toss it behind a fullback who was like much smaller than me, which a lot of people in high school were, I was coming to dinner. Like I was trying to kill people in high school.
How big were you in high school? Like
I was
sophomore,
like 6'1". I was pretty 6'1", 240. It's probably the same.
Oh man.
Yeah, and I could move and punch too. Dude, I got the full face mask. You know, like
middle bar.
I didn't have the middle bar. It's the one thing.
You had a bull ring, right?
Dude, I had a bull ring. Yeah. I had the Junior Seau like face mask for his entire. Dude, it was hilarious. But to get back to it. Don't answer me questions, Brady. No one wants to hear about me. They want to hear about you.
Dude, I love it. I gotta use this as an opportunity to ask you guys some stuff too.
No, that's cool. But let's get back to you. So you're playing a lot of basketball. You're playing all these other sports.
Yeah.
You're playing football. When do you like look at yourself and you're like, man, I'm because we all do it, even though you're the most humble dude I've ever met. But you're like, man, I'm not so bad. If I'm pretty good at football, like I could do this. Like our team's good or I'm good. Like maybe there's a next level opportunity. Like when do you feel that's a 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably the end of sophomore year, 10th grade. So freshman year with football, I played JV and some freshman stuff. And then going into sophomore year, it's first year I played varsity. We actually ran a wing T too. And I was the wing back, running jet sweeps and waggles and, you know, different plays like that. But that was really the first year where I started to make that transition from wanting to pursue college basketball and all that entails to, okay, this football thing could be a reality. But at the time I was, you know, maybe a buck 75 and 5'11". And so it was, okay, I need to start really dedicating myself to the weight room and trying to develop my body physically so I can withstand a full season and, you know, be a good contributor and hopefully have a chance at the next level. So I'd say that sophomore year.
So sophomore year, so how do you go from 6 feet, 175 to a Wisconsin Badger fullback? I mean, that is a big jump.
Yeah, it's so about 80-pound jumps, like, what it is.
Yeah. So by senior, yeah.
That
go
picture
ahead.
Of you on the Falcons catching that ball and running with the what was that, the black pad that used to come out?
Cowboy collar. Oh, cowboy collar.
You look bad, man. I was like, is that me?
All I think about when I look at that picture is that I could not keep my mouth guard. I think my mouth guard's in my helmet. I kept gagging on my mouth guard that game for some reason. I could not keep it in. So every time I look at that, I have this weird memory of gagging on my mouth guard.
Well, before but, the college, yeah. But how did you, was it, I mean, was it just like, was it just nutrition? Was it like weight room? Like, how do you get so good? And how big were you when you got to UW? Like 220-ish?
I was 210, 215. So by senior year, that's what I was. I played about like 208, 210. And it really a combination of both those, man. It was weight room and nutrition. So I struggle to put on weight. I think, Bernie, we talked about that before. You're like, man, must be nice. But I struggle. I had to force myself to eat. So I was eating 6-7 meals a day. Junior, senior year, usually training twice a day in the summer, at least. But I was a three-sport athlete. So in basketball, I always would lose a bunch of weight, even if I was training. And so you're kind of doing this yo-yo thing where you're trying to get control of it. But going into my senior year really made that a priority and was able to get up to that 210 range and was originally recruited as a running back to Wisconsin and then made the flip once I was there to that fullback position. And then the weight gain journey started again to get up to the prototypical Bernstein or Presley or Rentmeester weight. I didn't get up to that range, but I got up into the 240.
Do you want to have been able to run? Like,
yeah.
It's so interesting because now I look at fullbacks like Alec Ingold, you know, Derek Watt, and you're like, man, how I might have been better at 240. Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it just brings a different, you know, I guess, threat out of the backfield. I don't want to say a little more athleticism because that sounds kind of demeaning
maybe
to you.
A little more finesse. I'll get a little bit more. It's okay. Because you know what's funny, Brady? Is that what I loved about your game is, and I think this is what happened after and what Coach Chris kind of figured out, right? Because he was your guy. I want to go back, but your game was that dude lined you up everywhere on the field. Like you were literally the pocket knife. The what's that other tool that you can use? Yeah, come on in.
Yes, Swiss Army knife.
Because you were like lining up at the all the way at the edge, running into the backfield and getting set up. And that was something that Coach Chris, like, Bernie, we're going to do all these things. But then I got hurt. So when I watched it, I was like, wow, you know how I know this guy's really important to the offense? They line him up everywhere. He shifts all the time. He's in motion and you're making blocks. You're catching balls like, and you're blocking for some of the best players to ever play. Like, it was awesome to watch. But we'll go into your beautiful career in a second. Was Wisconsin the only one on the – like, do you only cared about Wisconsin? Or was there, like – was Iowa coming in? Were there some other schools you're like, oh, maybe I can play running back at these other schools? Like, what does that look like? And did you take any visits?
I did, yeah. So I guess in deep in my heart, I always wanted to play at Wisconsin, being from the state and growing up watching guys like you and others. It's like, okay, I want to be a part of this. Is it a reality? Whether that be, and for me, I wanted to be a scholarship guy. I mean, that was kind of like the goal that I had and I had set for myself. And so as you're going through the recruiting process, I did look at other schools like Northwestern, went down to Iowa, Purdue a little bit, but all of the opportunities at that tier were, you know, walk-on opportunity. And I got that offer extended for a walk-on at Wisconsin as well. My one D1 offer was from North Dakota and was to play linebacker. And then I had a lot of D1 or D2 interest there and some basketball interest as well. But for me, it was, okay, do I go run off to North Dakota, take the money, that's awesome, you know, try to play linebacker, or do I go be a part of something that's bigger than myself, that I believe in, my family believes in, with Wisconsin? And if it doesn't work out for some reason, you always have the opportunity to transfer and try to do something different or something new. But to me, I couldn't pass up the chance, even if it was as a walk-on, to go to Wisconsin. And I felt like the playbook was there with guys like Luke Swan, who's from Fenimore, Wisconsin, who's, you know, 40 minutes away from Richland Center. My mom grew up in Fenimore. And so there was a family connection there where it's like, okay, the playbook's there, and others many before him that have laid a foundation to do this as a walk-on. And so I took a leap of faith and wanted to do that.
Well, and obviously the walk-on tradition at Wisconsin is so rich and so deep. I mean, you mentioned Luke Swan, but I mean, there are more guys than we can count who have come to UW as walk-ons, turned into scholarship guys, and turned into really big time contributors, especially at the fullback position. But so when you get on campus and you arrive, what, 2007, I think, right? 2007 is when you...
2008, spring.
And so I'm trying to think who's in the room at that point. You've got John Clay is there. I think is Rentmeester still there?
Rentmeester and Presley had 1 year of overlap with those guys.
Yep. And who else is in that running back room with you guys?
So PJ Hill, Zach Brown, you know, Presley, Rentmeester, John. I guess those would be the main ones.
Because then after that, like Monty and James White all sort of come in the next couple of years. So, I mean, you're overlapping with some of the great, you know, a lot of the great running backs, you know, early.
Yeah.
How fast did you make the switch from running back to fullback?
So it was my freshman year. I stayed at running back and I ended up, you know, helping out on some special teams and playing a little mop up running back time. But interestingly enough, when we travel, I would usually hang out with Chris and Rentmeester, you know, those guys. You know, Billy and I would usually watch like hunting shows or, you know, at least talk about that kind of stuff. Pretty classic. And Presley just was not having. And he's like, dude, you already know what the outcome's going to be. Like, what are we doing here? Why are we watching this? This is ridiculous. But hanging out with those guys and learning a ton from them, just not necessarily the X and O's of, you know, how you're blocking and where you're putting your hands and things like that, but just the way they operated. They were, you know, I think fourth or fifth year guys at that point that had been around the block, had a ton of success. And so really cool to watch how they operate, how they lead, and laid a foundation for the 08 season was kind of a struggle. And, but I think there's a lot of good parts there and a lot of good pieces on that helped us catapult things going forward. But as far as the transition, so that freshman year I played that mop up running back and special teams. And then going into that sophomore year is when I had the conversation with the coaching staff and asked if that's something I consider. And as a walk-on guy, that's just trying to be a part of it, help the team and see some field time as well. It's like, absolutely. If you think that's a good fit for me and a good fit as we go forward, I'm all in. And that's really when the next phase of the body transformation tried to take place and started trying to get up into that, you know, 240, 250 size range while still trying to keep as much endurance and speed as I could.
So talk about that conversation a little more, because, you know, it's, you're a running back your whole life. You know, you're just got watching. I think Chris Presley was one of the hardest hitting dudes. Easter, you know, that guy flew under the radar for like most violent hits. I think Presley was like running into a brick wall. You couldn't even bump him without being moved off your path. If you bumped him without him knowing, you would have fallen down.
So, yeah, like, absolutely.
You go and you watch these two guys. I actually think those guys were more old school, and I think you changed the game in fullbacks, not being 250 plus pounds, not being just a blocker. I mean, let's be true. Yep. Presley, me, and Rhett Meeser were blockers. We did some other things well, but like not all the time. You just wanted us to block. What's that conversation like? You go in there and you're like, are they going to want me to be this violent? Are they going to want, like, what's that conversation? Because it had to have done something to be like, to your brain to say, hey, I actually think this would be good for me.
Yeah. I wouldn't say.
Who's in that room? Is it like Coach Chris in there?
Like, yeah, it was Coach Chris. Okay. I mean, it was really, and now that I think of it, it was during that bowl prep time leading in the Champ Sports Bowl where, you know, he just pulled me aside after practice. It wasn't like this big, you know, orchestrated sit down meeting. It was just a, hey, I think you could be a good fit at fullback. And I was like, yeah, you think I could be? You think I could do that? And for me, I always ran the ball very physical. I could run the ball. I would lower my shoulder. I would typically choose to do that over, you know, try to make a move on somebody. I just tried to be physical. But it was really hard as we worked on that during bowl prep for me to make the transition of bringing that type of violence to the fullback block and to sustaining that. You know, it was different for me mindset wise, lowering my shoulder and, you know, trucking somebody, making a quick move and getting off that, where now it's okay, I need to make a physical hit, but I also need to find that fine line of being under control so I can sustain it and use the right angles. And that took a while for me to apply that. And so that bowl prep time was a really good time to experience it without the pressure of it necessarily having to go out and be on the field and, you know, a couple of weeks the next fall. So it wasn't a big drawn out conversation.
Sure.
Matt, I wish I had something for you, but it was more of a planting the seed and then throwing me in there and giving me some experience.
You know what? And just like that, that's a great story. Like, it doesn't matter. These things, I don't know how all these things happen. So I think it's really cool to hear that's just like that. It could be on the field and someone changes your life and then you play it in the NFL. You know, like, we have a lot of stories that guys are like, yeah, I just want, somebody said you should just play here, and boom, now you're doing a couple years in the NFL or 10 years. Like, it's pretty amazing and also crazy to me. But
well, you know how Coach Chris is. I love that dude. He's just like kind of nonchalant, you know, not fly by the seat of his pants, but kind of. He's just like, hey, let's run some fullback with you, you know. And you all of a sudden you do a few reps, and then he pulls you aside. And he's like, yeah, I think we're gonna do this. It's like, all right, let's do it.
It
seems like such a blip on the radar, but like you said, it's set the trajectory for. Right. Man, a huge part of my life and being a part of something much bigger than just me, which is hard to believe that it's just a little comment like that. And then all of a sudden it goes to your direction.
Quick comment. And then boom, it is, your life is set. It's so weird. I always say this because people are like, oh, you know, like, what's the best thing you ever did? I'm like, well, probably play at Wisconsin football. But like Barry Alvarez had to take a chance on a kid. Mm. Like, I feel like everyone gets there, you know, like someone takes a chance. And then, and I'm married to someone from Wisconsin. Like, I, you know, like all these ties, like I would have never had this life if one guy didn't say, like when I reflect, it's all these kind of weird things, you know.
But we wouldn't be on this podcast.
We
wouldn't be on this podcast.
We wouldn't be on this podcast. Like, we would literally, I don't know what I would have done if I went to Syracuse to play D-line. I could be, I don't know. Who cares? Syracuse, never heard of him. So wait, but let's go back. Because I showed up and I was a fullback in the wing tee. I ran the ball every single play. It was all about, you know, getting to your spots quick, fast. You know, Matt Perkins, you played in it too. The easiest part about football was running the ball, catching the ball. Yeah. It was blocking seems so simple, but in the wing tee, it's all shoulder blocks. It's all like hitting quick. You're not sustaining blocks. It's so fast, like crosses, and you just got to, and running backs are through. Sometimes you don't even block dudes. So talk about like the progression of, well, I guess I really want to talk about like the weight room, but like talk about the progression of like trying to figure out how to block. Cause it is not an easy, it's not as easy as everyone thinks.
You're 100% right. Wing tee, you're hitting dives, traps. And, you know, I moved from the wing to the actual fullback like yourself, and you're hitting holes and you're going, right? I mean, it's a timing thing. And guys are just covering people up for a split second enough for you to get a cut back and bounce the play. When you make that transition to blocking, it's especially in the zone offense, it's okay, I'm running my footwork, I'm reading the D line. Okay, where am I inserting? where's my linebacker responsibility going to fill based on how the D-line might have worked a slant or something like that. And you can't, unless it's a true ISO or a middle draw or something where you're just head up against the middle linebacker, there's a lot of finesse to it, at least, you know, in the system when I was running, when I was there. And so having the ability to read your vision, much like a running back would at that level, where you're reading the D-line, how they're slanting, reading your insert point, and fitting up on that person, I would say based on compared to like you and Presley and Rentmeester, you know, three guys that kind of laid the foundation for the position, the old school position. Like I didn't block a lot like you guys as far as, you know, some of the hammering blows, to be honest with you. I would more so cover people up and run my feet until the whistle. And that's what I prided myself on is, okay, I'm going to insert like a running back, lock onto this guy, and I'm just going to move my feet and let the running back, you know, choose where he wants to go. And so I would say it took me a long time at least to try to bring the physicality with that and then use my hands strategically, keep them inside. You know, you're holding every play. But you're trying to keep them tight and not get called for it too much. But really for me, it was the mentality shift of taking that same mentality and that physicality, running the ball and applying it to the fullback.
It's really like, as I think about it, I think my coach could have written a book on how to do it. Like, he's like, dude, you got to be violent, but you can't attack. Like, you can't hit right off the bat and be violent and out of control. You have to be like in control. And then as you hit with your face in your hands, your steering wheel, you grab on the inside, but like, and then you have to cover that dude. Right. Like, so right. The back, you can't just angle them out because the back will automatically cut back. And that is wrong most of the time.
Right. You don't want to make the decision for the running back.
Exactly.
You cover him up and get some movement and let the running back pick his hole. Cause you don't know, that safety could be filling down on the backside, or, you know, the backside linebacker may scrape over the top. So it's, there's a lot of, you know, when the Wisconsin team's been clicking, running the I base run packages, you take for granted how many moving parts there are to that, whether it's gap scheme, you know, lead zone, draw scheme, whatever. It's just, there's a lot of moving parts to it and so much technique there where people think it's more like the wing T. It's like, okay, I'm just going to shoulder block this guy and create an angle, create an edge, and the running back's going to hit it. Where, man, there's so many, you could take a play basically anywhere on the offensive line. If it's a zone play called right, that thing might hit back in the backside C gap. You never know, or it could bounce. Mm-hmm. So it could literally hit anywhere on the field, depending on what defensive front they give you, you know, what type of slant they have, if the linebacker's wrong shoulder and if he's coming, you know, strong. So
I don't miss the wrong shouldering ever.
Power with the wrong shoulder on the edge of the line of scrimmage.
Actually, the power I loved because you knew it was coming. And I was okay with that. I'm like, we're running right behind, right off my tushy. And I'm like, man, I got to make this block. Like, you're the key. You're the point of success on that play. Like, I loved the power. It was my jam. There are some plays that I was like, man, I literally hate this play. So in practice,
every day we would slide draw.
I actually liked in the game, but not in practice, because all the middle linebackers, once you did that little jump to the right, they knew what it was. So they're like,
yeah, they already knew.
Coming full speed. I'm like, coach, just don't call this in practice, dude. We don't need to do it. They know what's coming, and they're in sprinter stances, like they're almost in like a 40-yard dash stance, ready to go. I hated that play in practice. In the game, I kind of liked it, but if we did it three times because it worked, like twice, that third time was going to be a headache every time. They were like biting their tongue. I hated that. Dude, we would do a zone play out of the eye or in motion where I'd have to go down and stay square because it was a zone play and hit the defensive end. And usually they thought they were wrong arming it because I was coming into that gap. But I would stick my head in the gap. They would hit me with the helmet. And then I would, you know, you get them square and then just holding them so they wouldn't move.
Yeah.
And the back would go. And I'm like, we'd start inside drill with this play every single day. And at some point, as you know, Brady, like I'm sure, maybe you didn't, I would be like, yo, J-Dub, dude, let's take this. I would just be like, dude, you know the play is coming. Like, so we'd fit up where he would win and where I would win.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, you're a lifesaver because this hit every time is killing me. It's my brain.
Yeah, honestly, people ask me all the time, going against scout team in practice or ones versus one in practice throughout the season is honestly, as cliche as it sounds, tougher than the game 95% of the time. Probably one, because of the adrenaline, but two, I feel like our defense knew, you know, what was coming, and we were trying to put ourselves in the most difficult positions, whether it be inside drill, throwing an extra safety or two in the box, just to see if we could figure it out. But I think it speaks to, you know, how that prepares you for the game, because blocking some of these guys in the Big Ten, you know, throughout my career, were honestly probably easier than a lot of our scout team players at the time.
I was about to say, it's probably easier than going like inside drill. You know what's also crazy? We would throw in a random pass play and the defense knew. So we would always go back and be like, yo, coach, these guys, are these coaches giving them the, because, you know,
they have the script, man.
They had all the script. They're like, you know, they were there like, okay, the fourth play is 30 zone to Bernie. And then like all of a sudden they're like, they're in a bare defense. There's nowhere to go. I'm like, what are you doing? You can't check because it's so inside. You're like, this is not going to work. It's so dumb. Yeah. Wait. So tell us your favorite play and your just least favorite play. It could be situational.
I always like Bob. So that would be like a weak side zone out of eye, or, you know, weak side eye. Least favorite play. So this wasn't my least favorite play, but it was a nice story that I wanted to make sure I touched on. Was you talk about lining up in like as a trips receiver, as a fullback. And that was something Coach Chris liked to do because it gave great personnel matchups where you'd come out in 21 personnel and all of a sudden the fullback's out at, you know, the split out. It's kind of an unexpected thing. So you can tell if they're in man or zone really quick. You can tell, you can get good matchups for your receivers, tight ends. And so we would motion out of trips receiver where I was the further out receiver and come back into the backfield. So it was flower motion, typically coming back into the backfield, and we'd run like weak side zone out of it. So I think it was bowl prep or maybe spring practice. We literally ran, we were doing a scrimmage, ones against ones, ran that play like five times in a row. So one of my favorite plays with the weak side zone, but when you add in, you know, 50 yards of sprint before you're trying to go hit somebody, and then you run it five times in a row, the defense knows what's coming. And that was, you know, classic Coach Chris at the time for spring ball or bowl prep, you know, just working certain things, seeing how guys are going to respond to it. And so maybe that's what I didn't like as much back in, you know, the 245 pounds days, is just running 50 yards and having to do my favorite play back to back to back to back to back.
Well, as a fan, I will say that was actually one of my favorite things about sort of the transition to Coach Chris, because, you know, Bernie, I love you, but they weren't sending you out wide to do that. They weren't sending Press or Rentmeester out wide. And Coach Chris used his fullbacks and his tight ends in a lot of really unique. Oh, I hate saying really unique. Unique's a binary. In a lot of original ways. And you were kind of the first guy to really, you know, I would say you and kind of Travis Beckham as a tight end were sort of the first two from those two positions to really sort of be used, be flexed out. You know, we'd see you lining up as a freaking H-back, as, you know, all these different places. What was it like to sort of, how hard was it to wrap your head around that playbook being utilized in a lot, you know, in a lot more of a new age way than most fullbacks traditionally were?
It was difficult. I mean, it was something that, I mean, you come from running the wing tee. That transition from high school to college for me was eye-opening, whether it be with the playbook, practice schedule, you know, adjusting to the school life, all of that stuff. To go from, I mean, we didn't even watch film in high school. Like maybe 30 minutes a whole week to, you know, watching film, what, 4 or 5 hours a day, maybe, with all the different meetings we had, and then learning a playbook that, where I was used to calling, you know, 32 dive or 32 trap. So they're telling you where to go, what the blocking scheme is. And now you got all concepts, whether it be, you know, the formation, the shifts, the motions, you know, pass concepts. So, okay, if this corner, if I'm in trips and we're running, you know, a go type scheme, if my corner is sagging off, I'm going to sit that down and I'm going to release back inside. So there's all these nuances that truly just take time. But at the same time, I think that's one of the reasons I was able to help as a freshman, was I came in, I was able to learn the playbook, and I just helped him in kind of that mop-up time. But having an outlet that was able to learn the offense, and I always tried to control what I could control. And that was one thing is learning the playbook, doing the studying, asking the questions. And probably some of the coaches got annoyed with me because I was that guy. Bernie, you probably figured with me, I was that guy asking all the questions, you know, to an annoyance. But it helped me wrap my head around something that was new to me. My so it was difficult, but I applied the time to make it happen. Yeah. What's that?
My wife knows everything about me asking the questions over and over and over again. Classic. Like, dude, it's in the calendar. I'm like, oh, but which one? Oh, that one? Oh. None of it. Sorry, Matt Perkins, but Brady, you literally have to put together not only the mental, which is extremely difficult, the X's and O's, like where you fit in, but then the physical of like trying to learn how to block and trying to figure out, dude, we're running routes. That's not normal. Like mm-hmm. not even probably the wing T, it's not really that normal. I mean, a waggle, you're doing like a corner, but like you're literally now split out, standing up, doing something. It's just a lot different. So putting all these things together is much more difficult. It's more than meets the eye. Good reference to some cartoon. Transformers.
Yes, that is correct. That actually is correct.
I know I'm old.
But yeah, Mickey Turner honestly helped me a ton on that. So my sophomore year, I had moved to fullback, but Mickey was really the guy. Maybe that was the year prior. I don't remember, but he was that kind of tweener guy, I would say, before I was, but for that tight end, the H back, mm-hmm. he could kind of do it all. So he was a huge help to me early in my career too, where I could, you almost lost him, man. Where I could bounce questions off of him. And he, you know, I think he was a fifth or sixth year guy fifth year guy at the time, you know, really had a good grasp of the offense. So he was a good sounding board for me.
Attention athletes. Do you want a frictionless and tailored financial planning experience to secure your future? Well, look no further. Introducing Oak Bridge Wealth Management, the premier financial planning firm for professional athletes. Led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, our team provides a unique and comprehensive approach, ensuring your financial success both on and off the field. We understand the unique challenges you face as a professional athlete, from managing cash flow habits to planning major business purchases and navigating complex contracts. That's why we've developed a proven process, working closely with our strategic partners to provide seamless solutions for your unique financial journey. Our services evolve with your career, offering short, mid, and long-term goal setting, portfolio optimization, real estate investments, and more. As you transition to life beyond the field, we support you with career development and philanthropic ventures. But don't just take our word for it. Top NFL players like Chase Roulier, Tyler Biadasz, Alec Ingold, and more trust Oak Bridge Wealth Management to guide them towards financial success. Troy Dye of the Minnesota Vikings says, "I really love the work that Chris and the rest of the Oak Bridge group do. I especially like the honesty and transparency when it comes to setting up financial goals and plans that best fit my needs and situation. It's time to elevate your financial game plan. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicete. And join the winning team."
Brady, after your freshman year, Coach Chris comes up to you and he's like, "Listen, we got a spot for you at fullback. Let's do it." That obviously means let's put on some weight. Let's get a little bit thicker. Let's get a little bit stronger, which means you're going to be spending a lot of time with Brian Bott. So talk to us about, especially that off season, transforming your body and what you and Bott, and I assume, you know, new lifting group and stuff like that. What was that experience like for you?
I loved it. You know, getting in with the meatheads of the offensive line, tight ends, you know, Bott was leading the charge there. A lot of Olympic lifting, a lot of, you know, just mentality stuff where you're attacking stuff. You're in the squat rack multiple times a week. So not only, you know, a big part of it was the physical development, putting some weight on, and had to be super cognizant about that. But a lot of it too is just a mentality that group had. And I loved being a part of it because I called myself a mini O-lineman at times, you know, just because of the style of offense we ran. And we've talked about some of the ways that Coach Chris tried to get away from that and bring a little more flair to it. But at the end of the day, you know, we were a running team, and to be an extension of the historic old linemen and to get to train with those guys day in and day out and bot, that was a huge part of my personal development and obviously a part of the team success too.
Great. I remember lifting with the heavies, but were you considered a skill or intermediate guy when it came to like all the running things you had to do?
I did. Yeah. So I didn't get great question, Bernie. I didn't get the sprint times that the old linemen got for some of the conditioning sprint work. I love that question. That's great. No, I didn't get that. So I was typically running with the skill guys, but lifting with the heavy guys.
Which was made life very hard when it came to stadiums. You had to run up a little bit further. When it came to almost everything else, you had to go do skill stuff, sprinting times, all that. That's the stuff that I, you know, like we didn't, when we did leg day, if you guys still did that leg circuit on Fridays,
yep,
we went with the skill guys. Dying with Greg Rude pushing the sleds, just two of us, not three of us. Right. Like it was ruthless. Herbs was ruthless. He's like, dude, you guys are the two biggest guys here. I'm like, why do I need to wear a 20-pound weight vest? I already have 20 of those pounds on me.
Hey, he knew you could handle it.
So wait, talk us through, because Herbs has had all the success really everywhere he goes. He's been super successful. I loved playing with him. I loved when he was graduate assistant, I guess, or assistant, whatever he was when I was there. Talk to me about like his progress when he's the head guy now. You know, what's that like?
It was an interesting dynamic between Herb and Bot. So I felt like, you know, with Bot taking the lead on some of the trench guys, O linemen, you know, a little bit with the D linemen, but O linemen, tight ends, and fullbacks, that was the main group that I saw him working with, where Herb kind of led the whole program. And I feel like Herb does a great job with, you know, the training side of things, as you would expect as a head strength coach, but also that motivational piece. You know, he would get guys hyped up for those competition Fridays, competition Saturdays, and challenging you mentally in a way that was different. You know, Herb always brought, I can just remember him like looking at me like with kind of side eyes as he got excited about some new task that he had for you and some new challenge that he had for you. He loved putting guys in situations where he could figure out kind of what you're made of in a way. And Bot does that too, but Herb had a way of doing it in big collective groups, which was always fun to do that type of stuff with the team, but then also have your consolidated group with the O-line tight ends where you're grinding day in and day out. So Herb does an awesome job, you know, whether it's, you know, the squat days that you've seen him do in the past at Michigan or when he's timed with Arkansas with Bielema. And bringing some notoriety. I think they did like a midnight squat club or something like that. So making things like that fun, you know, the marketing side of it, guys get hyped up for it. You know, he's great at that stuff. And then technically as well. So he brings a really good mix to it. I remember him going to him and talking to with nutrition with him when I was working to put on that weight. And my worry was I was going to get too heavy and not be able to keep up with the athletic side of the fullback position. And he's like, bro, if you eat good, you eat, you know, these things and putting good quality nutrients in your system, you know, you're not going to get too heavy. Your body, you were training enough, you need the calories. And he was exactly right. And I just followed the script and, you know, fortunately it worked out physically.
So Brady, talk us through some of the times, like when you know, you start spring ball, you're now the fullback, you're the dude, you know, tell us what, you know, like when did it come to you and you're like, man, I can do this physically. I can block these dudes mentally. I can do all this. I can catch the ball. I'm doing what Coach Chris is telling me. When does that start clicking? Just tell us when that starts clicking, 'cause I can tell you exactly when it started. But I would love to hear when that is for you.
I think it was towards, like, honestly, for me, I'm kind of a paranoid dude. So even when I was in the role playing the position, it wasn't until I had some games under my belt where I was like, okay, like I'm a Big Ten fullback. I guess I had some identity challenges there for a while where it's like, I had that running back history. I felt like, you know, my size was undersized, But as I continued to get more confidence and see that I could hang with Big Ten linebackers and be a key cog of that offense, that's when I really started to believe that, you know, I was in a great role to help the team and to have success myself. And then really that junior off season, you know, Coach Settle, I can remember coming to him and or him coming to me and saying, hey, we're getting a lot of questions about you from scouts. And he's like, I really think there's an opportunity for you to do what you're doing here at the next level. And here's the things that I think we need to work on to get you to that point. So that was, you know, whether it was me coming to that realization that I fit in at Wisconsin in that type of a role, or having the realization of the potential to pursue it at the next level, it all happened pretty quick. And I think a big part of that was honestly all the success that our offense had. I mean, the O-line we had when I was there, the running back talent, tight end talent. I mean, you could go to, I think my junior year, I think everybody on that offense either played professionally or was drafted, and some of the backups like Bill Nagy, you know, he was a backup heavy tight end that year, just through some of the injury stuff he had in the offseason. So just a part of some ridiculous teams, and no doubt that helped me have more success as well, personally.
Well, one of the things that, you know, stood out to me, you know, watching from the sidelines, was that you were sort of, Bernie, I love you, but you weren't catching the ball out of the backfield a lot. And Brady, you were one of the first guys who, one of the first fullbacks for the Badgers who was really starting to go out and be a reliable receiver, someone that, you know, was counted on. Were you always comfortable, you know, running routes, catching balls and stuff like that? Or did that, was that another one of the things that sort of took you a little while to like really get going and get comfortable with?
For me, that was second nature. I don't know if it's just growing up playing the sport and around the, you know, football a lot, but that was never a challenge for me. I'm not here to just pat myself on the back, but freshman year, that was actually something Coach Bielema called out as I was, you know, trying to earn a spot on the roster and play as a true freshman walk-on, is I didn't drop a ball all fall camp. I don't know, well, wasn't thrown to as much at that time as a lot of guys, but he actually called it out towards the end of fall camp that I think it was like 30 some passes or something that were thrown to me and I hadn't dropped one. So that was fortunately kind of came second nature, and, you know, something that Coach Chris, I think, saw early on and wanted to try to take advantage of that in the offensive schemes.
So you mentioned the running back room, because this is like one of the time periods where pretty much this is like one of the best, some of the best teams to ever play in Wisconsin. Man, go through the running back room. Like you were in there with stars. You're a star. Also, just to go back for a second, I do think you changed the game in fullback. Wisconsin fullback.
Absolutely.
So I have to say that again. You were the most versatile fullback that ever was there. One guy who might have been close but was not used like you, Chad Coons, was super athletic. Like, he took a shirt off and you're like, oh my goodness gracious, this dude's cut abs. Like,
yeah, I didn't have that though.
but you remind me of him, but he was not asked to do anything but block for Ron Dayne and Michael Bennett, which is, I mean, obviously. But you had like Cecil Martin, me, Prezi, like, that's a different mold. You changed it after you. These dudes, Derek Watt, who just retired, I mean, we're giving him a shout out. Alec Ingold, like, these guys more in align with you and your kind of style and what people are using a fullback for now than more than align like with me. And so how cool is that? Like, that you kind of changed the game. You're going to be too nice about it, but how cool is that?
It is pretty cool. And honestly, I haven't reflected on it a ton. So it is neat that I was a part of that. You know, for me, I still look at guys like Mickey Turner. We've talked about that, but where he was kind of that transition from tight end, at least to fullback in that H-back position. But yeah, I think you look at the ability that can bring in personnel matchups. It's fantastic. It is humbling to think I was a part of that journey. So you look at Alec Ingold, Derek Watt, you know, a lot of the, I think they both came in as linebackers, along with some of the others that have come after them have, you know, kind of melded into that fullback position. They're not recruiting just fullbacks anymore. You know, they're recruiting, athletes that can play different positions. So it's cool to see that that's changing. now with the new system, you know, we don't really have a true fullback. So I gave Coach a hard time about that when I've had the chance to meet them, but they find different ways, you know, much like Mickey Turner or myself or others, to use somebody in the backfield and run similar schemes. So it's all a game of matchups. You look at the NFL, you look at college football, the way that things are trending. It's a game of matchups. It was a game of personnel, trying to get the one-on-one matchup you want and get a playmaker on the edge. So you talk about catching passes. I always loved like a fake zone lead and then running the slide route to the backside. I think it was Northern Illinois down at Soldier Field. We ran that play like 6 or 7 times my junior, senior year. And always loved routes like that, but also like being split outside. So I think that versatility is awesome what to bring it to the offense, but it's also fun for me being a former running back guy that was used to touching the ball like you, Bernie, and with the wing tee, you know, 30 times a game, you know, getting your hands on the ball every once in a while was always fun.
But it's fun to catch the ball as a fullback because you usually you're within 2 yards, like you're kind of open.
Right.
Like nobody cares about you when you're out there in the flats or so. And everyone's like, this guy's worthless. I could just tackle. But it's nice. You catch the ball. And sometimes I would catch it and be like, turn around and be like, where is everybody? This is abnormal. And then start running. And then, you know, someone just gets my shoestring and I would fall down. But,
or you hurt a little.
Or you hurt. Not yet. But it's a dynamic that it's hard to just coach against, right? Like you see teams in the NFL with fullbacks who are versatile. It's hard. You have to put in a different personnel on defense. So the offense is more dictating than the defense is when you have these guys. Neither here nor there, but I don't know what our position would be like right now. I mean, we're not tall enough, I think, to be like an H-back tight end.
Right.
Hey, I wouldn't have played at all in this offense. You would have been fine, I think. I would have been the center guard and the tackle of the water bottles.
No one ever heard this show. You figure it out, man. You adapt and evolve. We'd figure it out.
Brady, you were a high school tight end for a hot minute. I think you would have been fine as an H-back.
Maybe a wing on extra points. That would have been great.
Everyone's got their role, Bernie.
You listen, I would have done perfect on that. So wait, go back to the running back room because you have studs in there. I mean, stars, left, right, everywhere you're looking, everyone's an NFL guy. Just when you walk in there every day, you know, Coach was awesome. I loved, you know, talking with him. But go into, like, how does it feel to be in that room with just studs?
Yeah, it honestly, when I got there as a freshman, pretty eye-opening. You know, you kind of become the fanboy. It's like, okay, I got Chris Presley, Rhett Meester, P.J. Hill, you know, Zach Brown, guys that I had looked up to from the high school time. So you get in there and it's, okay, what can I learn from these guys? And it's also cool to realize that they're just people. Even meeting you, it's like, dude, one of the most genuine, you know, people. But you have this, you know, aura that because you watched them on TV or, you know, you listen to Matt LaPay call games, you just have this different perception. And then it's like, okay, they're just people. They're dealing with the struggles of college. They're dealing with the struggles of learning the playbook, all of that stuff. So to kind of peel back the onion a little bit and just realize they're just people. I love that aspect and getting to know people and their backgrounds. But to answer your question is, you know, those folks I just mentioned, but then you look at Melvin Gordon, Monte Ball, James White, you know, Jeff Lewis, to name a few of them. And it's really cool to look at where I was at in my career with some of those different guys. Where fortunately some of them looked up to me in, you know, where I was at as far as, you know, leading the running back room and being a part of that and leading the team. So I can still remember Melvin Gordon as a young running back coming in. The dude was always watching Adrian Peterson highlight tapes all the time. But you look at his game, I mean, and as a freshman, it's like, man, what's this dude? I know he was a big recruit and all this. Like, what's this dude doing hanging out in the training room, laying down, you know, watching Adrian Peterson highlight tapes? But you look at his progression throughout his career and then what he's done professionally, pretty phenomenal. And to be, you know, I didn't have the chance to block for him much just based on who was ahead of him in the depth chart at the time. But to be in the room with him, to see his development along with Monte, James, and how long he played in the NFL and the different roles that he's fit in, from primary running back to third down back, and just, you know, being versatile, being able to change his mold depending on what resources the team needed. Super special. And more importantly, the friendships you develop with those folks is just awesome. Great people. You know, Matt, you said you had a chance to talk with James. James and I actually roomed together. So when he came in as a freshman, I think I was a sophomore at the time. So we traveled together in the hotels, both home and away games, and we roomed together. So that dude could snore up a storm. And I told him as much, and I was like, dude, you got to get checked for sleep apnea, because I'm not sleeping a wink leading into these first couple games as I got used to that. So, you know, James and I, you know, awesome friend. And
who are the guys who kept practice light and fun in that group?
In the running back group?
Yeah.
Usually Monte. Yeah. Monte was always keeping it light and fun. I don't know if he always loved practice that much, so he was always finding different ways. I don't know. Everybody kind of fit in that role. You know, we found different ways to keep each other, whether it's the 15 periods of individual we were doing and grinding out. You find different ways to entertain each other, different conversations as you're going through the lines and the workouts. And honestly, as cliche as it is, that's the stuff you miss, you know, is just that brotherhood, the locker room. And where else can you have people from different back East Coast? You know, we had a kid guy from Haiti on the team. I mean, just all over the country come together for one singular purpose and chase those goals together and come into the same locker room. Are there tiffs sometimes? Absolutely. You know, any family has stuff like that. But at the end of the day, everyone's united and heading the same direction generally. And it's fun to be a part of that and get to know the people through the process.
Well, you mentioned Monte, and that your senior year, you were lead blocking for him when he, 33 touchdowns? I think that was the most in college football history in a single season, or at least Wisconsin history. The most prolific offense I think we've ever seen with Russell Wilson at the helm. Talk us through that season. Russell comes in as a transfer, which at that point is still very rare for someone to transfer and then be immediately eligible. Grad transfers are just sort of really becoming a thing. What was, you know, we've had Monte talk about it. We've had a couple other guys talk about it. But what was sort of like the energy around the team that season? Because it was special from afar.
Yeah, it was. I mean, expectations were super high. You have a fifth year coming in, mm-hmm. transferring in, like you said, eligible to play right away. And the way that Russell came in and commanded, he wasn't there long in the summer. I forget exactly how the timing worked out, but came in and commanded workouts, you know, ran what we could as far as, you know, 7-on-7s and Skelly stuff, you know, what was permitted. The way he learned the offense, you know, was crazy. I mean, this dude was walking around as silly as it sounds with flashcards, you know, testing himself all the time. And that, you know, from an outsider's perspective, it's like, dude, is that legit? But the way Russell approached things was truly like a professional. And I think that probably spoke to where he was at in his college career and the transferring thing and some of his baseball experience, but truly approached it as a professional. And the way that he was able to bring the team around him in a short amount of time was pretty darn impressive. And so we felt like we hit the ground running and expectations were high leading into the season. And, you know, I think you look at like fullbacks, tight ends, offensive line, we took a lot of pride in protecting them. So that first game against UNLV, I remember we were super proud of the fact that he didn't get touched all game. He did scramble a few times and he ran out of bounds and didn't get touched, but he didn't get touched in the backfield at all. And so I think that game, along with all the preparation leading into it, and the way that he commanded the huddle, just set us up for a special, you know, special season. And there was challenges there, but at the end of the day, that was a pretty, pretty special group to be a part of.
That's what Monte said too. Said right away, commanded the huddle, and you just, even if you were like Monte, one of the best dudes on the team, still you listened right away. Like he just had that presence.
He did. Yeah. It's hard to explain. And, you know, you see, you know, Russell, I think he's with the Steelers now, yesterday or earlier today.
And they love Badgers on the Steelers.
What's that?
Badgers. They love Badgers on the Steelers. They collect
them. They got a couple or a handful of them now.
What, six of them now, I want to say, something like that. Like,
wow.
I think, well, Derek's retired, but what, TJ, Loudermilk, Keanu Benton, Nick Herbig. I'll count Nate Herbig, Nick's brother, as an honorary Badger because he's related to Nick. Yeah, exactly. Russell. Yeah, it's definitely Wisconsin East over there in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So we only got a couple minutes left, but I want to talk about you were drafted. You were drafted in the fifth round. What was your draft experience like? Did you expect to get drafted? Did you know sort of that Atlanta was targeting you? Like, what was your run up to the draft and your draft experience?
It was pretty awesome. I don't want to make this just feel like I was a big fanboy, but to be able to get to go through the combine, the Senior Bowl, to meet some awesome people and, you know, stuff you've watched from afar, to be able to experience that and live it out. And it was kind of surreal. Leading into the draft, honestly, Atlanta wasn't on the radar at all. They had Ovi Magaly at the time, who has, you know, was kind of a longstanding staple for them, not only for the team, but in the community. They were one of the teams that, you know, didn't do a workout with me, didn't interview me at the combine. So kind of odd, you know, when they were the draft call. But we thought the Texans would be, you know, somebody that were interested. I sat down with their whole coaching staff at the combine. They put me up on the whiteboard, you know, drilled me with different questions. Pretty fun experience. Gave me a backpack for the ordeal, so I thought that was pretty cool.
You still have the backpack?
I do, yeah. And it was their stocking cap in it, so got a Texan stocking cap. But so the we had thought, I think it was like 159 or 157 pick in the fifth round. I forget exactly, but the Texans had a pick a couple draft picks after that, and so that. You know, fullbacks traditionally would go fifth to seventh round to undrafted free agent. And so, you know, I think the best case scenario was going somewhere in the fifth round. And you get all of the teams, I'm sure you've had other guys talk about that are playing games with you a little bit early. Like first night texting me, say, you know, I'm, you know, XYZ coach or scouting from here. Like, we're thinking about taking you tomorrow. And I'm like, dude, that's second or third round. Like, that's not happening. So they're playing games with you a little bit, I think, trying to set themselves up for free agency or from an expectation standpoint, playing the games a little bit. But even after the combine, after the Senior Bowl pro day and all of that, a lot of teams were calling, just checking in, seeing how your health was doing. Trying to poke around and see what other teams were interested in you, and never heard from Atlanta. So we got the call and had my family at my parents' house here in Richland Center and saw it was an Atlanta number and picked it up and had the chance to talk with Mike Smith at the time and Arthur, the owner of the Falcons. Pretty surreal experience. And it's almost like you're having an out-of-body experience. You know, you've worked so hard and you've been a part of some great football and you made so much progress, but to have this, you know, pinnacle of what you always looked at as a dream and feel like you are reaching it, but also setting yourself up to see, okay, what's next from there. It was a pretty surreal experience. And then very quickly thereafter, a week or two after, you get down and you jump into, you know, rookie mini camps and OTAs and, you know, navigating the challenges of, you know, my wife and I were newly married. So, you know, living down there and just, you know, what are we gonna do for living situations and just the uncertainty of everything at that level. But it was just an amazing experience to be able to have that, have my family there who was so supportive throughout my whole life and grandparents and others. So just a lot of good memories surrounding that, you know, couple months there throughout after my senior year at Wisconsin.
Love that. All right, we only have a couple more minutes, and Matt Perkins loves to do this Q&A quick hit. What do you call it, Matt Perkins?
I don't know. Rapid fire, lightning round.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Okay, rapid fire. Then I will start. Brady Ewing, the five best running backs in the history of the Wisconsin Badgers are blank.
Oh, man. Ron Dane, Melvin Gordon, Monte Ball, James White, and... Matt Bernstein?
Jonathan Taylor.
Jordan Taylor, sure. Small sample size
for Matt, though.
Dude, I'm like top six on fullbacks and maybe the six. That weird thumb. Wait, who, hardest hitting linebacker on the team and hardest hitting outside the team?
Chris Borland.
We didn't even talk about him. Dude, your team was too stacked. It's not even fair. We could have done this for an hour and a half.
So stacked.
So I could dive into more there. I mean, Chris was one of the toughest people to block because he could hit you hard. He could smash you in the mouth. He was so low to the ground. But then what we talked about earlier, it's like his ability to be able to change directions and see the running back and have that mix up of bringing it hard or laying back. It was so tough to predict that. So he was always a tough one to go against in practice. I like to talk about the, you know, other teams in linebacking corps. So like Penn State was always a super tough task as far as preparation for. They had such good athletes that could run, where some other Big Ten schools, they just had thumpers inside there. So I thought, you know, Penn State was always some of the most difficult to block for me.
Favorite Camp Randall moment?
Beating Ohio State when they were number one at home.
Gilreath taking it back and going from there.
Opening kickoff. Yeah, that's the loudest I've heard Camp Randall. I mean, it was unbelievable. College game day, all the hype leading into that game. And then to come out and basically put a stamp on it from opening kickoff to set the tone for that game was awesome. Get goosebumps right now talking about it.
For my money, the two loudest times ever that Camp Randall has been is that. And then when John Stocco did the QB sneak to beat Michigan, I think those are the two loudest times that the camp has ever been, at least in my experience. Okay. And then I guess we'll get you out of here on this. Where do you see the position of the fullback going in the future in the NFL as things keep changing?
I mean, you look at what San Francisco's doing with Kyle, I still don't really know how to say his last name. Yeah, what you said. I think that's the future. You look at the transition at Wisconsin with Bernie, Presley, and others to, you know, we talked about to me and, you know, what's continued to happen at Wisconsin. I think that progression is only going to continue at the professional level. You look at what Kyle does and others in the league. Alec Ingold is a great example of that. The way he's a multi-dimensional athlete, can play running back for third down situations or running back type situations. I mean, at the end of the day, you need to be an asset at the NFL level. And as a fullback, you need to be able to play special teams. You got to be able to play some mop up running back time or some third down running back time, especially with how long their season is. So I think the more versatile the fullbacks are in today's day and age, the more successful they'll be.
You know, some people say the fullback is dying, but three of the four teams that were left at the end of the season all use fullbacks heavily between Juszczyk and was it Patrick Ricard on the Ravens and
that's a big dude.
Oh yeah, well he's like 300 pounds. Like he's like 290, 300. He's an absolute animal. And then
he's still an old school guy.
Yeah, he's not reinforcing my point there. I was just going to say that.
Oh yeah, and then the Lions is a fullback as well. So whose name is escaping me right now? So I think there's always going to be a place for a fullback. I think there's always going to be a place for a versatile player who can do all of those things, who can block, who can catch, who can run. And, you know, football's always going to change. It's never going to stop changing, but it's, you know, it's exciting. You know, I will miss the Matt Bernsteins of the world out there on the field, just laying the wood on everything.
We'll have to get a fan favorite somewhere that does something like an old lineman catching, you know, having a mullet catching a, you know, touchdown pass. I still can't understand that mullets are so cool now. I mean, I like them, but I would look like a complete idiot with one. But like, I think we just got to find a fan favorite and just go with it and pump it up.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think it's like Fullback is Life on one of the social media things. So there's a couple good social medias out there still celebrating the fullback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Brady, thank you for coming on and letting us celebrate you here on Believe in Badgers, part of the Believe Network presented by betonline.ag and Oak Ridge Wealth Management. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in wherever you are. Please subscribe, rate, and review. That really helps us grow and reach more people and get awesome stories out, like people like Brady, like everyone else who hops on the podcast. We'll be back again soon with more interviews, more fun, and more Badgers. And so until next time, on Wisconsin.